Here's something off the request line from Liberty Island. We gotta squeeze some New Year's juice from you, Big Apple.
Happy New Year. Stay fit, keep sharp, make good decisions.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Well, and we're back, Dice and Jacks. I'm Tomo. Craig Pappas on the board. S&P futures, we're off to the races here this morning, up 56. NASDAQ futures up 245. Evidently, terrorist attacks are bullish, Greg. What do you think?
Uh-oh. Bad precedent.
Let's see. Do we have Professor Liu?
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy New Year.
How are you?
Good.
Well, my decisions yesterday that I didn't think the first game would be much of a game, so I kind of was traveling during that one. Figured I'd watch the second one, and the second one sucked.
The Texas game was something. I mean, the kid missed two field goals from inside the 40, which I guess he hadn't done ever. And it was just a wild game. And if Texas doesn't get those two early touchdowns, Arizona State comes back and I think wins that one, given what was going on. But let me just ask, did you guys have a nice New Year's Eve celebration down on the waterfront? Do they still do the fireworks?
They do the fireworks at Navy Pier, and they do them on up the river at a lot of various bridges. So it's still nice.
Yeah, cool.
It's not as nice as the one in New York. I mean, I watch that one usually on TV. But I don't know if there's many parties. You don't get the Channel 9 one station was covering it, but you don't have the million people at all the different parties and all the hotels and stuff like it used to. I don't know if that's as big as it used to be. You know, the hotel parties and stuff.
I spent at least a couple of New Year's Eves with the kids down in Millennium to watch the Navy Pier fireworks, and that was cold.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were really warm last week, but we got cold kind of Tuesday night. It's colder now, but
I guess there's a big deep freeze coming. I think it's going to miss us, but I think it's going to hit you guys pretty hard coming up within the next week or so.
Yeah, they're talking about. By the way, I heard the best New Year's resolution yet especially from an attorney.
Uh-oh.
Guess what it was. I resolved to make it to at least January 9th before I blow all my other New Year's resolutions.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So there you go.
See, I try not to... The time, in my opinion, the time for making resolutions and the way to do it is Lent. And so I make a resolution over Lent, you know, to give up something, you know. One year I tried giving up being stupid, but couldn't maintain that.
No.
But you know, that's a manageable time frame. You're not doing it forever. You understand there's an end of it. You're making something at least ostensibly for a sort of a self-denial, self-discipline kind of thing. But it's not forever, and you understand that. So there's not the temptation to just and that's I guess that's the proper word given that Lent is a religious obligation.
Well, as a person who went to Catholic grammar school, high school, college, and, you know, born and raised Catholic, which I'm pretty proud of, actually. I did not realize until I got to the trading floor that when you give up something for Lent, now this is how guys on the trading floor always had an angle on everything.
Yeah.
You know, I just assumed, since they claim 40 days of Lent, that there's 40 days in Lent. Evidently.
Well, no, it actually lasts much longer. Not much longer, but longer.
It actually lasts longer because Sundays are not counted as part of Lent.
Correct.
Well, I did not. I never crossed my brain. So I didn't realize that if you give up something, they would borrow Sundays.
Right. Which I think is cheating. Because in the Catholic...
But by the time the sixth day, they all were going to stop drinking, right? Well, by the end of the first week, they were out of Sundays. So they ended up just saying, screw it.
Well, the other angle on that, of course, is that again, if you're... I never followed this. I heard it when I was an adult, like you did, that Sundays didn't count.
That's what they told me.
That's right. You could deviate from your obligation on Sunday. And I thought, well, that's stupid. You're not giving up anything then.
Well, if you think you're giving something up for 40 days and it turns out it's 46, I guess you get the six back. I'm not into that either. But these guys, the problem is after, well, the first Monday, they would go to the bar, and of course that was the first Sunday. Well, by Thursday or Friday, you're out of Sundays, right?
Yeah. And you know, the problem with that is that it defeats that kind of thinking, is it defeats the whole purpose of the self-denial, which is discipline, and, you know, it makes you think about what you're supposed to be thinking about during Lent, which, you know, is the passion and everything else. So that, and I don't go to church. I'm not practicing. I when I first got married, I moved over to the Methodist church because the Methodists, and unlike the Catholics, the Methodists will take, you know, they'll take anybody. And I'm witness to that.
No fault religion.
No fault religion. Well, and we really, you know, the whole Methodist doctrine, which I found very appealing, actually. The Methodist theology is very appealing, but it's just a question of, you know, do you want to enforce it? And my experience in the Methodist Church is that generally they were nice enough people that they really didn't want to enforce any rules. You know, when you started raising Methodist theology to Methodists, they go, yeah, we don't really, these rules are kind of just guidelines, you know. God. the Pirates of the Caribbean defense.
Did you ever see that poster of bleep happens for all the different religions?
Oh yes.
Is that a riot or what?
I
but the Catholics are bleep happens, but I probably deserve it.
Well, bleep happens and it's your fault.
Yeah, and what's the Jewish is a bleep Jews, happens, but only
for the Jews. It's why is this bleep always happening to us?
All right, we got to talk about the new year. Happy New Year, by the way.
Did you guys catch my intro? I wished you Happy New Year at the start of this.
Greg managed to, he bunked that somehow.
Well, let me say Happy New Year again, then, because you know, you reflect at the end of the year what you've accomplished, what you haven't, and I do this more at the end of New Year's than I do at Thanksgiving. What you should be thankful for, and as usual, I am thankful for my association with you, Tom, and with this program. And Greg, not so much, but you certainly, you, Tom.
Greg's coming up there, you know.
and this program and the Stocks and Jocks crew, because I really enjoy this conversation, and I enjoy the interaction with the other crew on email and outside of the program. And so, thanks.
Do you think we could possibly gather a more diverse crew in thoughts and views, but with the exact same let's get everybody better theme?
I don't know. Do you have a? You really don't have a what I would consider to be a real progressive
poor Brendan and Eric are both sick.
Ah, okay.
Okay. But we might get Brendan back, and I think Eric is, I think he's doing better because he's going on a cruise to get married, so he must be doing better.
Well, he'll get better up until the marriage, and then, you know, he'll be sick again.
Very nice good, lady. Half
good for good
half
for him.
Black, half Hungarian. Boy, there's a mix.
Wow,
she is attractive. She's been in politics, Washington, her whole life. I'd love to get her in. I tell you what, talk about somebody knows where a lot of the bones are buried. There's one tough, nice lady. I don't think she shrunk from anybody out there.
See if you can get them both on, because I would say we've got what I consider to be center right conservatives, but you really don't have, and this is even true of our libertarians, what you really don't have are ideologues. You know, the people that tend to come on here tend to be more pragmatic, and so you get
neither one of those guys are ideologues.
I'm sorry?
Neither one of those guys are ideologues. They're just a little more...
None of us are. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's true. I think you'd give a much more pragmatic orientation, which gives you the kind of, you know, range of diverse thought, because we have a slightly, many of us have a slightly different view in terms of what works. But in any event, it's a privilege to be associated with you and
this
group. So thanks.
You know, I'm always kind of in the middle. I've reached a point where I'm not going to solve world problems, in the sense that I can't fix Venezuela. I can't fix Yemen. I wish I could, but I can't. I'm one of these guys that, instead of arguing about the 200 people or 100 people that are immigrants that are sitting by me looking like they want a job, let's just get things going for this 100 people. We'll work the other stuff out later, or we won't, but let's look at the stuff we can fix, and let's fix it.
And you know, that's a very, I consider that, perhaps incorrectly, to be a very Catholic worldview, which is you fix, you know, you take care of the guy or the people next to you, and then the policy issues, great, fight about those somewhere else. But, you know, I can't fix the world, but I can fix maybe two or three people. I can help maybe two or three people. I'll help them.
Yeah.
And that's got to be, for most of us, that's got to be enough.
Well, it's all you can do. I mean, what's the, I went to this one place. I think it's where I adopted poor Scruff, my little terrier dog that I adopted. It was something like, you can't change the lives of all the different dogs, but you sure as hell can change the life of one.
Right. Right.
And you just, you know, I think you just, and I think if all the little stuff starts to fall, all of a sudden you gain, what did, I used to watch Kung Fu when I was young, can you imagine?
Oh my God, Kwai Chang Kane.
Well, I like Master Po.
Okay.
When you Kung Fu's young, these guys come and they're beating the crap out of him, right? And so Po, of course, you know, pulls a can of whoop ass on the guys beating him up. And he says, well, you know, I owe you. He goes, oh, yeah, you owe me. Now you have to do that for 10 other people.
Right. Right.
So if you...
No, I mean, maybe, and, you know, that's probably a pretty good resolution. You know, I'm going to try to help, you know, two or three people this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's you just... And not only that, it can kind of grow from there. I mean, the thing I remember about, you know, Catholic stuff was not so much the religion, but the fact that the church itself, and Kevin will attest to this for sure, the church was the thing for the community. And they knew people had trouble, even in a parish like mine, which was, there weren't hardly any rich people. I mean, it was mostly middle class. Everybody had something. My a scale of 1 to 10, my stepfather was probably a 7.5 or 8, because he went to, he had a GI Bill stuff. There were a couple of guys that were 8s or 8.5, but there was nobody that was a 10 that I know of. You know, even the guys who were lawyers were just regular lawyers. They weren't, you know, guys that were doing big conglomerations or anything like that. But you had a women's club. You had a father's club. If some kid was in trouble, everybody knew about it. If somebody, they didn't even have any lunches. Well, maybe 10 kids got to stay for lunch with their parents. Maybe somebody died. If you didn't go home for lunch, if your mom had to do something for a day, go to the doctor, you went to the lady next doors. It was a sense of community. It almost didn't matter what the religion was, and you know, I think that is missing. I don't care what brand you put on the place, you know. But it's the idea that somebody's heard. I mean, the Jewish people are very into that. You're there. You have to go to church a bunch of days a week, and somebody's hurt. You help them out. I mean, it's the community thing. And who knows where we're all going when we're gone? But I mean,
you touch on a an important aspect that is, again, all the bad stuff that I heard predicted in the 1960s by the so-called, you know, right-wing crazies. We would call them right-wing crazies now. But the Barry Goldwater conservatives who said, you know what? If you let go of religion and we let religion disappear, it's going to be a vacuum and something's going to fill it and it's not going to be good because religion focuses on something other than yourself and answering to a higher authority. And the only authority left after you remove religion is other people. And if you think we're gonna end up creating a cult of the personality or a cult of focus, and there's gonna be a vacuum that something's gotta fill and it won't be God. That was one risk. That's certainly come true with a vengeance. The idea that, okay, if we establish free access to birth control and we promote sexual promiscuity, we are going to open up the floodgates to all kinds of, quote, immoral behavior and problematic dysfunction within the most fundamental relationships between men and women. That's happened in spades. I'm not saying these things were not positives. I think in many respects they were. But I think we are slowly coming to the realization that when you give the population as a whole unfettered choice without the kind of grounding in a moral framework, things start going to pieces, and we're watching that.
Well, I think that it happens when birth control first happened and people first moved out of the house, and it was kind of my generation. You know, I didn't. I mean, everybody moved to Clark and Division. The amount of sex people were having, it was incredible. It was 10 times what it is today. I mean, you didn't have AIDS. So the worst that could happen, you got a shot of penicillin in your ass, basically. But at the end of the day, everybody knew they're going to end up with a family someplace. I mean, it was more of a 4 or 5 year, 2 or 3 year. Okay, we're young. We can do whatever we want. But the idea of doing that for the rest of your life never even crossed anybody's mind.
Because the pill unlinked sexual activity with significant moral and economic consequences.
Right. Meaning babies.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And it separated the risk for young women of significant problems with impending pregnancies and lifetime of care obligations and everything else.
Trying to figure out who the father was. Yeah, if you really want to go wild.
Yeah. I remember the first time I saw the film Mamma Mia with the ABBA music thing.
Yeah.
And I went to that movie as a dutiful husband because I hated the group. I thought their music was awful. But my wife at the time thought they were great, so we went and saw it. And I remember thinking to myself, I can't remember, I think it was a stage play. Either the stage play, whatever came first, the stage play or the movie, I went and saw it. And I just remember thinking, you know, the fundamental line of that story is this woman's getting married and her mother doesn't know who her father is. So she invites the three likely guys that she was sleeping with at the time to come for the wedding. And this is this big thing. And I wanted to stand up and go, wait a minute, full stop. Is anybody else troubled by the fact that this woman has no idea who the father of her child is because she was sleeping around to such an extent that she can't identify paternity? Hello?
One of my best friends adopted a young girl, and the mother was Irish and the father was one of two German guys. Never really found out which one of the two, I guess, and nobody cared.
Yeah, well, of course, now, you know, the DNA takes care of that particular problem. But
if you care enough to go get the two guys and give you their DNA,
that's exactly right. Yeah. But I remember thinking to myself, this is a marker of, I would call it, moral decay, that we are basically thinking this is a comedic situation rather than a tragic situation, and that you're getting my probably my Catholic roots showing up here more and more as we talk, but I look back at all those predictions, and again, many of those predictions from the 60s were not motivated by good faith, whatever. They were motivated by a desire to control and a desire to manipulate, but at the same time, that didn't mean that they weren't foundationally correct in terms of their assessment of how people were going to behave when you lift these restraints and don't replace them with anything. I mean, you and I have talked many times about how politics has basically filled the role of religion for too many people.
Well, and it's maybe not a good thing. I always thought.
Oh, I don't think it is a good thing. I think it's a terrible thing.
I mean, you need. There's always going to be somebody. I mean, what percentage of the population who thinks that the rules are something to get around, but most people think the rules are just an extension of how people actually just want to behave. I mean, the reason why you have, you know, a law against killing somebody is because most people think maybe you shouldn't be killing people. Duh. You know, so the one or two people out of the 10,000, problem is if everybody starts getting this moral relativism like you talk about, well, that's okay. What's wrong with that? I mean, what's wrong with cheating and inside information on stocks? What do you mean? You know the company's going under, but you sell your stock out and all your shareholders you're supposed to be working for get screwed. If people think that's just the way you're supposed to be successful, I don't know that you have enough people. You can't have enough people with the room. I mean, look at this guy down in New Orleans. I mean, this is, you know, something that, and now all of a sudden everybody's talking about security this, security that. You know, Lou, I'm not going to say you shouldn't have security. I'm not going to go there. But to me, it is so insane that if you can't guard everybody, trying to pick the spots where you think are the most likely and people making money doing it is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I mean, I know that obviously with people dead, people wish there was some more security there. Well, yeah, I get that. But the whole idea of everybody now, and we're so ignorant as a society, that everybody's going to do the same bad thing the other guy did instead of thinking of something new. Well, if you and I were of that bilk, if all of a sudden all our morals would go out the window, I have a feeling you and I would be pretty damn good terrorists. I mean, instead of saying, okay, well, everybody's going down to the security in New Orleans.
Greg's going to cut this discussion off in about 2 minutes.
Well, I mean, I'm not about to give any ideas, but my point is, we have all kinds of security going into Wrigley Field. Yet, every time the light turns green, 200 people walk across the crosswalk. All you have to have is a big box truck. You can take out 50 people. I mean, what's the point of hardening one spot? Maybe I'm pissed off because here right by in our area here, the Federal Reserve is pretty much right across the street. After 9/11, these guys spent millions of dollars and hardening this up. They block the street. If you have the ability to have a truck comes in there, they can x-ray the whole truck. You know what, Lou? We're across the street. Now what? We're the soft target? We're the one guy in the block that doesn't have the ADP thing in his window, even though the other people don't have a security system. They just got the sign out there. So we're going to be the one getting robbed? I mean, where are we going with all this? If you can't protect everybody, how do you protect anybody?
Okay, so in a free society, and this is why democracies will always be vulnerable. In a free society, you balance the security needs of the society against the liberty that the culture is founded on, the liberty standards the culture is founded on. And for us, security is secondary to a number of these freedoms, like freedom to assemble, freedom of speech, etc. So security, whatever security steps we're going to take, we're going to mold them around these, you know, these basic fundamental principles. And so at the edges, you know, terrorists are going to be able to exploit this. I think the problem in New Orleans is not that they had too much security in place, or too little. It's that the security that they had in place, they didn't exercise. They didn't block the street. You know, they have retractable barriers on Bourbon Street that come up to prevent precisely this from happening. They apparently were not functional for New Year's. They did have a police car parked there, but it was parked incompetently. so that it wasn't blocking the entire street. I mean, I'm sorry. Who did nobody think about this?
Okay, but my point is, and I'm surely not going to argue on that, because that's the truth, because you actually had some there and you didn't do it right. But the fact is, there's going to be another block somewhere. There's people on, you can run into them.
Well, that's going to be if bad guys want to orchestrate wholesale mayhem attacks, like ramming attacks. You know, we saw this in France back, what was it, in Lyon or Nice?
It was like 2 weeks ago.
I think it was Nice, where the guy drove his truck down through the pedestrian area.
What about, was it Britain? It was right by Buckingham Palace where he did it.
Yeah, Britain had the one. Germany just had the one at the Christmas markets. If somebody wants to engage in this behavior, given the way our freedoms are arranged, we're not going to be able to stop the occasional psycho, jihadi, whatever. And so this is going to be something we're going to have to manage, because the alternative, much like the whole gun issue, the alternative is to turn us into a police state, and I don't think we'll tolerate that. We don't tolerate it. We don't tolerate our political elites anyway. Don't tolerate even the most basic law enforcement mechanisms. If we end up actually catching the criminals who are responsible and throwing them in jail, we hate that. Our political elites in the big cities hate that. In fact, they work to avoid it. And Chicago and L.A. and to a lesser extent New York, certainly New Orleans, Washington D.C. These are all classic examples of what you get when we get efficient at law enforcement and we start throwing the guys that are doing the bad stuff in jail, and the immediate reaction is, well, we don't want to do that anymore.
Nobody wants, we have a very odd idea in this country of crime and punishment. It's incredibly odd. You don't want anybody cheating, and yet if somebody decides to throw all the cheaters in jail, you don't like that guy either. It's really bizarre. I mean, I used to see it on the trading floor.
I think that's correct. And so in any event, the point that I was making was just that we're going to be doing this balance walk now, but I think the general assessment in New Orleans, or at least the assessment that I have and I think makes sense, is that this is not a case of too little security. This is a case of incompetently placed security, much like the Butler assassination attempt on Donald Trump. They had plenty of security there. It was just stupid.
Well, sure. What I'm saying is the idea, though, that, I mean, this is my point, and I don't think you're necessarily arguing with me. If the barriers would have been up, the guy would have picked a different block. I mean, he'd have found somebody.
Maybe. I think this was specifically aimed at that part of town, and they were going for, an easy way to create mayhem.
Well, I don't doubt it.
You're right. I mean, perhaps he would have found another street. He wouldn't have found another street where he would have been able to kill as many people or injure as many people.
He could have. I mean, I'm saying I'm not about the lob out ideas. Although people have, Lou, I absolutely am convinced that the Tom Clancy book, where the guy flew the plane into Congress, gave somebody the idea for 9/11. I mean, I don't know if I'm right on that, but. I mean, as soon as I read that, I'm going, wow, somebody can actually do that. And so, people aren't all that inventive on their own.
Well, two angles here that I think are problematic. Number one, the actual physical security in New Orleans, which has an incompetent, as I understand it, police chief, as well as an incompetent mayor, who I think is actually accused of running over and killing two people earlier this year in her motorcade. The other issue that I've got, and this is my concern, is if in fact we believe this guy was not just somebody who did this, but in fact part of a wider group, and my understanding is that is the assessment right now.
Well, he's an Army vet. How the hell did
why didn't we know about it? I mean, for heaven's sakes, we're monitoring Catholic churches. You know, the FBI was targeting these groups. The FBI runs down every J6. Face that appeared even around the Capitol. We can't catch this guy who apparently got radicalized. He was going through a divorce. I mean, sort of a classic life upheaval situation where he could fall under the sway of a, you know, jihadi or other kind of influence. He gets radicalized, and I'm operating on the assumption here that he was in fact radicalized. I think that's a safe assumption with the ISIS flag and the pro jihadi stuff that he had on social media. I think it's a fair assumption to say this was a you know, Islam, a radical Islam based attack, and that's what this guy was doing.
But how do you know whether
how do we miss it?
I have a few people that are close to me that. They listen to the as far right wing as you can go. If they you know, like Fox News is way too liberal kind of thing. You got to go to whatever the next one is, and then or the next one. And I know somebody who's a former policeman, nice guy, split ball with him all the time. He's got two TVs and one radio going at the same time, with as far right as you everything wrong in the world is Biden now that Hillary's out of the. I mean, It's not Islamic jihad, but it's jihad of some kind. If this guy all of a sudden goes off his rocker someday and does something to somebody, nobody did it. It wasn't like somebody called him up and was coaching him. He just picked it up. I suppose if you I don't know how to do it, but if you went on the web and just started reading all kinds of stuff from the ISIS and all of a sudden thought they were right and kept doing it. It's not like some ISIS guy had to coach you.
No, but it's possible.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's possible that he would have picked that up at a mosque. Okay.
Well, maybe.
And that's where a lot of this within our system anyway. That's within the West. That's where a lot of this comes from. Is mosque, some of the preachings in the mosques that these guys run into and the stuff that they can find online can do exactly what you just described. Are you feeling downtrodden? It's because Allah has turned his back on you, and you need to make a sacrifice, or you need to do something to establish, you know, the ascendancy of Islam, and these guys catch this stuff. There are hundreds of cases documented in the UK, which supplied more foreign fighters to ISIS when that group was running amok in Syria and Iraq than any other country. And you go back, and almost universally, they traced it back to mosques that had a fundamentalist Islam bent, where they were actively recruiting, and you know it's possible that's where he get it. He didn't have to get it online. He would have stumbled into it if he was attending a mosque. He would have stumbled into it, or could have easily stumbled into it, at the mosque. And we know. I mean, we used to put data out like this on this regularly, but I haven't seen anything recently. But if you, there were certain places, certain mosques, if you wandered into them around the D.C. area, for example, that actively preached pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian Authority, pro-whatever, anti-Israel sentiment that would tap into the imaginations of people who were displaced.
I think it's very easy to do that.
And this is the danger, Tom, again, of religion being displaced by politics. And Islam has the tremendous advantage of being both a political and a religious system.
That's why I think they're dangerous in that regard. But you know, my feeling is we don't argue, we kind of joust. I think a lot of this stuff, two things are happening. One I think we already covered is everybody feels like they're not quite, that the world is doing them wrong right now. The economy has been, not only has the economy not been the best for lower to middle class for probably 20, 25 years, you've been lied to about how well you're doing, which to me is so damn aggravating. I don't know what to do about it, but I'm never going to pick up a gun. But I mean, right now people feel, that most people feel they're being hosed by, I won't say the man, but somewhere along the line, this combination we got going here with politics and big business, I don't know who's going to do it. Well, probably not in our lifetime, but somebody's going to say this is enough. Now, whether everybody decides to go with, I mean, nobody thinks the legal system works for them, both in cost and in outcomes. Nobody thinks that the economic system right now is working for them. Nobody feels their government is on either side is giving them the straight story. I mean, nobody does. Now, if you're normal and if you're right and you have some kind of morals to you, you say, okay, that's something I can't change. I'll help some people that I can, you know, and I'll take care of my family as best I can, and I'll just somehow absorb it and maybe vote for a change or whatever, if you can ever vote for a change, which you really can't. You know, as crazy as people thought this election was, so one side or the other, nothing in 4 years now, all the economic numbers that, that we talk about on this show, you won't see one blip difference between whether this guy got in or what's her name got in. Not one, because somehow or another, the control is going down the line of the, we're becoming, as you said when we first met, we're becoming a fascist economic system that both parties now appear to be under the direction of whoever the fascists
are. See, now you get it, Tom. I've been saying this for a while.
You and Lou have the same mentality about this. So, I mean, people are pissed. Most people are not going to grab a gun or a car or whatever. I mean, I hope. But the fact is, there's this undercurrent, Lou, and people in Palestine, they've been generationally, you know, everybody has a brother or something that's been killed by somebody on both sides. What does it take for somebody to snap? I mean, I don't know. I'm going to try and get Dr. Blade on one day. What would it take? I mean, I think that you've probably deduced that I got to be the most nonviolent person that ever walked. I mean, I won't say that. I'm not like Gandhi or anybody like that. But what would it take, my family, my friends, if all of a sudden, you know, a few of them start getting taken out here and there and by some group or government? Lou, I have a price. I'll snap, won't I? Somebody will.
Well,
everybody will.
Let me throw one other element in here, and that is, you are looking because your worldview foundations, your assessment of the world. What is the term? Gemütlichkeit, the German word, I think. Anyway, your assessment of the world and the way the world works is not a vacuum. But if it was, if suddenly the world stopped making sense to you and somebody comes to you and says, here is the answer, here is the reason these things are happening, it's the Jews, it's white people, it's immigrants, it's black people, it's whatever, it's the non-believers in Allah, and somebody comes in and offers you that system, that suddenly thing you say to yourself, this makes sense. And now that same person or that same worldview that has now filled that vacuum in you, the people that you listen to who espouse that worldview are now telling you, look, the only way this changes, because this is the way the world is working, the only way this changes is by disruption and acts of terror. And this is late 19th, early 20th century stuff. This is Joseph Conrad when he talks about terrorism operating in England. This is some of the other Bukharin from Russia and some of the other nihilists who wrote about what it takes to destroy a culture and a society. This is the mindset, and this becomes your religion. You now assume, I am working for a higher cause. I am working for a cause to destroy the corrupt system, to fight the man, to whatever. I mean, if you look at some of the stuff that comes out of the Antifa chapters in places like Portland or Washington State or New York City, it reads like, as I said, these late 19th century nihilists and anarchists who just say, look, everything is bad.
Well, how close?
Our goal is to reduce us to a state of nature.
Not changing the subject at all, but how close were we? I mean, when I was growing up and even, you know, going to school, the whole part about you learned about the Depression, you learned about
the 20s. Were very close. I mean, answer your question, we were very close.
I mean, nobody wants to even think how close we were.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't called
isn't
Nazis.
That when Sinclair Lewis wrote, isn't that when Sinclair Lewis wrote, It Can't Happen Here?
Yeah.
And I mean, about the fascist takeover of the United States with a charismatic leader.
What was they weren't called Nazis, though. When they had the big Madison Square Garden deal, they had a massive crowd there. They didn't call themselves Nazis, though. What was the name?
Well, they called themselves National Socialists.
Okay, but did they really? Okay, I thought well, it was another Americanized name of some kind.
The group that facilitated, the group that was facilitating, was the German American Bund.
Okay, okay, that, that's the one. That's the word. What's the one I was looking for?
Okay,
but I mean, there were Armin Hammer's father went to jail because they thought he was a communist because he went to a communist rally because you know, hey, the capitalist system wasn't working so well for just about anybody, right?
Yeah, well, there's a great book I've got in my library about Russia, and I can't remember. I want to say it's called The Dispossessed, but I'm not sure. But it's about the thousands of Americans who emigrated to Russia during the Depression because they believed the propaganda coming out of the Soviet Union that communism was working, and here was a chance to do new stuff. And the Soviets welcomed them initially because it was necessary to bring these people in, late 20s, early 30s, bring these people in to, for example, provide engineering and support and construction support and knowledge. And these guys were given Soviet passports, and they came in, and they immigrated, and there were thousands of them, and they all disappeared, all of them. I mean, there may have been a couple that got out, but when you read the accounts of these people, and of course, within you know, 2 years, 5 years, they're writing to the American embassy in Moscow saying, for God's sake, I'm an American. Help me get out of here. I can't leave. You know, they're not letting me go. And the American embassy, this is an FDR failing, basically turned its back on them.
Well,
we were here. We were very close. The alternative was 10 times worse, but people didn't know that.
I mean, how do you know that?
Yeah, well, I mean, had we had accurate reporting, but you know, this is the famous Walter Lippmann thing. Well, I'm really racking up my historical references here. This is the famous Walter Lippmann issue with his reporting from Moscow in the 1930s, where the Soviets deliberately, and this guy was a tool, promoted with him, through him, the fact that the show trials and the terrific repression and the famine in Ukraine that had been produced by Stalin, that all of this was a fabrication of and quote misinformation, disinformation from Western source, from anti-Soviets, and Lippmann said things are wonderful in the Soviet Union, and that's why these people, that's part of the reason these people came over. So in any event, to answer your question, we were much closer during the Depression to that kind of an issue than we wanted to admit, and you know, the fear of that. You remember MacArthur breaking up the Veterans yeah. Army, the Pension Army in the Capitol?
Why was Roosevelt so against? I mean, just about all levels, I thought the man was one of the most brilliant men that ever walked. Why was he so against giving those World War One guys their money?
I think he saw it as a payoff, but a payoff that was responding to a threat, what they thought was going to be a violent threat, and so they went crazy. They authorized MacArthur to go in there and do whatever he wanted to get those guys out of there, and he, you know, they brutalized them.
And they were all vets.
Yes.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, somehow back in the day, you didn't get paid so much when you were in the Army. You got paid when you mustered out, and I don't know how the hell that all worked, Lou. But so when people left the Army after World War One, for some reason, a lot of them didn't get paid, or they'd say, oh, we'll pay you in like 3 years or 5 years or something. Was that just a budgetary? What was that, Lou? And all of a sudden, they didn't pay people.
Yeah, I think it was a budgetary issue, but they were desperate not to be seen as a as kowtowing to these guys' demands, and
again, so it was like 15 years after World War One. How much longer did they live?
What did I call it? Not the veteran army, the bonus army.
Yeah.
Okay. 43,000 demonstrators. I just pulled it up. 17,000 veterans, their families, mid 1932 to demand cash redemption of their service bonus certificates, and
what exactly were those?
They had been the Congress had awarded them bonuses in the forms of certificates that weren't supposed to be redeemed until 1945.
Okay.
And the face, the bonus certificate had a face value with compound interest through 1945, and it was a chunk of money for the Depression.
Oh, millions of dollars.
On.
Yeah, it was total.
The Depression had been going on for a while, so they said, look, this money in 1945, we're in 15 years, we're all going to be dead. We don't need this. We don't need the money then, and we don't want it going. Apparently, it was redeemable only to survivors. It wasn't redeemable to their relatives. So they wanted early cash payment of it, and the government said no, and then the AG basically ordered them removed. So when they wouldn't move easily, the Washington police shot a bunch of them, and Hoover then ordered the army to clear the campus, and MacArthur moved six tanks in. Imagine this now: six tanks on the Capitol, and along with cavalry.
Yeah.
And they were driven out. Shelters and belongings were burned.
Well, just all burned up.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Lou. I think that right now we have.
They did. Well, by the way, in 1936 they paid those bonuses out.
But you know, even that, both Congress passed the bill to pay the bonuses out. Roosevelt vetoed it, and it was overridden by both houses of Congress. Why was he still so dead set against it?
I think he looked at this. I mean, it's amazing for a guy who was considered to be a man of the people.
Yeah,
and interestingly enough, Tom, a guy who's Bacon was going to be saved by a lot of those same veterans.
That's what I mean. They were all Roosevelt later. Voters, for God's sake.
Yeah, yeah. So,
the economic thing. I'll just lob this in a few minutes. I don't know if you know this history. You might. People will say there was not one depression. There was two depressions. Okay. So what happened when Lou's talking about 1936? The Fed had just come into being. Okay. And they just had something called a reserve requirement, which they had never really used. Well, now 1936 comes, and because of this makes it through Congress, it gets overridden. They essentially sent out all these checks to people in 1936. I think also in early 1937 or late 1936, the federal government got a hair up their ass that nobody should be able to hoard gold, right?
Yep.
So anybody who had gold, be it, you know, I mean, I guess you could have it for jewelry or something, but the government went out and bought all the gold from everybody at, I don't know what dollar or price. So for those 18-month period, the government poured essentially money into the system, sort of like, you know, the COVID checks, almost to the same amount. That money, and all of a sudden we allegedly came out of the Depression because everybody hadn't had any money for 8 years. The velocity of money, how quickly do you think most people spent that, Lou? And 8 years of no clothes, of whatever you even got for your house in those days, that money just went out the door as fast as possible. So for an 18-month, two-year period, it almost looked like we were coming out of, but as soon as that money was gone, we were right back into another depression. Of course, the Federal Reserve was so stupid, they decided we're overheating. Overheating. I don't know what planet they were on, Lou. So they actually raised the reserve requirement for banks that were trying to lend money to people. So people will say the Fed caused the second, quote, depression. But it was just a system, a series of kind of things that happened all in succession, and nobody kind of put two and two together, sort of like now, right? Nobody seems to be able to put two and two together. I mean, does anybody quite get, Lou, the separation, other than individual people, between going on between the highs and the lows right now, and how it is absolutely non-sustainable, and I think, in our society? As much as I see, I love the market up for my clients and everything, and the fact that more people are involved in the market than in 1929, only 7% of the people on stock. It's got to be way more than that now. It's got to be like 50 or 60.
Yeah.
With 401ks.
401ks and retirement plans, right?
But still, I mean, the idea that all the money and the people that have all the money in the world never, quote, earned it. It's all because of an increase in asset pricing. Well, some people have the assets, some people have to rent the assets. So you're not really bringing everybody along, are you, when you do that?
Yeah. No, I think that's... I, I, those are real issues. I'm trying to think of a comparable, and we got to go here. Right? Time flew today. I'm trying to think of a comparable event that would trigger this kind of a mass, you know, uprising that would put us in danger of a major revolt. I don't know.
I think it probably has to do somewhat with could be with energy. I mean, the idea that people show up in their Gulfstreams to tell you how you're supposed to use less energy, that gets old.
Well, let me give you a circumstance, and this is happening in a place called Transnistria, which is a part of far southeastern Europe, bordering on the USSR. Ukraine shut off gas supplies to Europe.
Oh, I saw that. Yes, I was going to ask you about that. Thank you for bringing it up.
Excuse me. So that happened. Europe has said no problem. We've been planning for this, and we've made arrangements. And by the way, it'll help the U.S. liquid natural gas industries a lot. But this thing happens, and in Transnistria they've turned the power off. Now this place is a mountainous, cold area, and they've told people to put heavy blankets over their windows, to plug in electric heaters if they've got them, and then to put everybody in a single room, so that their
body.
They have the power,
the electric power to take over for the gas. Nobody does.
No, they don't. The electric grid's not going to be able to support that. They've lost all their hot water. Most of the people have no hot water, and they have no heat. So a situation like that in this country, as you noted, would be something comparable, I think. Because if it's January, and the government has mismanaged whatever infrastructure or whatever, or Tom, we have an act of war against our energy structure. You know, the Chinese have figured out how to hack in, and they shut down our stuff. They wreck it, so we can't get energy out. And the government, which has demanded that we go to all electric, now can't produce electricity. So now you're a dad of two kids sitting in your house. You don't have a wood stove. There's no wood to burn anyway. Your electricity doesn't work, which means your gas heat doesn't work. You might be able to get a gas fire lit in your stove if you're lucky. But if you've got an electric stove, that doesn't work. And multiply that by 100,000 families, and you got a riot. You got a revolt going.
I think you can still light the top of the stove if you had a match, even if the electric doesn't work.
That's true. But if you've got an electric stove, so you know, suddenly we have 5,000 fires breaking out.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So anyway, on that pleasant note.
I think there's a chance. I hope that. We'll talk about this more next week. I hope our new president can work his way through the first few months without disappointing an awful lot of people. That, you know, even though Kevin will say he never said that, I'm going to say that's what they heard. I've heard people writing into Quora going, "How long before Trump is in office before all the inflation numbers start to come down and everything?" It was like 2 months, and I'm going, I don't know what they heard, but boy, if Trump turned himself into Harry Houdini, he's not going to fix things in 2 months, is he?
I don't think so, but we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, I hope. I'm going to give everybody chance.
Let me put it this way, Tom. I hope he fixes the things he's got the ability to fix. I'll take that.
We'll both take that. Oh, he said a lot. He said a lot of things to a lot of people that heard maybe stuff that he didn't think that he was saying, but boy, they heard it.
Yep.
I mean, one of these. I mean, obviously, we, you know, Kevin's one of my best friends, and always will be one of the. But we have this little bit of a thing we always go back and forth on. He dives into the detail much more so than I do, so I respect him for that. And he'll say, "No, this Tom Howe guy, I went back to his last five shows. He never once said you should sell stock because market's too high." In my mind, I never once said that. I don't give market advice. But Lou, if I walk by five people in five different bars and they said, "This chief guy said to sell everything," I'm going to say to myself, somehow I must have said that. even if I didn't intend to, that's what I said because that's what was heard.
Well, you know, and I'll leave you with this: it's politics. In politics, as with many other things, perception is reality.
Yeah. As the movie said, when the facts conflict with the legend, print the legend, right?
Yep. Okay. You have buddy, a good, good
you
week.
Take care of yourself. And are you skiing? What are you doing? You guys got snow?
I'm working.
You guys got snow, or it started out strong? Is it still?
A lot of snow. A lot of snow out west. None in Denver.
Okay, but it was snowpack's good.
Oh yeah, they got a bunch.
All right, well, good for you. SP futures up 48. NASDAQ futures up 220. Greg, you want to come go right to Dan, or you want to go break? What do you want to do?
Dan's here.
Dan's here. I guess that means Dan. How are you, buddy? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you.
So did you buy Spoo on New Year's Eve night?
No, it was a laid back evening with some friends. That was it. It was kind of try to lay low.
Well, good for
you. How about you?
We actually, you know, it's the I was talking to Greg about this before the show. The world so much has changed after COVID. You know, downtown. I'm saying, Greg, what would you guess the amount of like hotels with parties and stuff is? Is that all over the place still, or I gotta believe it's way less because Channel 9 didn't have their show or anything. But anyway, we went out for one of Audrey's friends and one of my friends. We went out for this nice Irish bar. Had a pizza. We were the last people who left. 10 o'clock. Nobody waits. Last year we were in my neighborhood and in the north side. And 10:30 they go, see ya. What do you mean, see ya? It's not 12 o'clock yet. Well, you can be anywhere you want. You can't be here. Fortunately, there was a nice, you know, my normal watering hole was across the street. Went over there and had a nice time. But nobody goes out late anymore. At least in the burbs, right. Boy, there's nobody.
I know. I agree with that. Same observation. I don't know about New York. I haven't spent much time in New York lately. But years ago, that was a very late night city. Yeah, it's not. Things have definitely changed. The people have mellowed out, I think, and that's not a bad thing.
No, I mean. I just talk about a thank you sermon I have another. Did you happen to read what you have to do to go to the Times Square thing?
I didn't read it, but I heard about it. Yeah. The long list of requirements to get in and all that. Yeah,
but the
amount of security this year I think was the highest ever because of for a lot of different reasons. I mean, some of them being like political, but I think a lot of it. There was a lot of attention focused this year on security.
But I think it was 5 hours before you had to line up, go through metal detector, no backpacks. Some of the women are actually bringing like diapers. There's no men's rooms.
Exactly.
There's no place to go to the bathroom. So nobody's bringing even. One lady said she hadn't had a drink of any water for 8 hours, so she wouldn't have to pee for the 5 hours she was there. And I'm going, wait a minute. It's not even healthy. What are you doing? And for what?
Right.
Plus, it rained the whole time, didn't it?
The weather was horrible. And you can see, you can see everything on TV. It's a lot clearer. It's like watching a game, the experience. Although I think depending on the sport, some sports are certainly a lot more fun to be there in person. But, you get to see a lot more. And certainly late night. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Good news, I guess, with this morning is that we're starting out a good tone with the futures market, even though the tone of the month of December ended sort of, the market was down for the month, but I wouldn't necessarily say it was negative. I think it was just some profit taking and probably a combination of people looking at how to position themselves for the new year. I've been saying it all along, although it wasn't you that was saying it. I've been saying take a little off the top, not necessarily sell everything, but take a little off the top. And so some of that was going on. I think there's enthusiasm. Interestingly, I caught the last part of your talk with Lou, and what I am somewhat surprisingly excited about is really seeing the first, short period of time, whatever that be, the first few days, the first few weeks, the first few months of what's going to happen with the new administration and how quickly, first of all, what the focus is going to be in terms of policy, how much of it's going to actually get executed or how much of it is going to be real, as you were saying earlier, as opposed to just chatter or speculation or perception. And and what gets done, and then for us, I guess, because we've waited all this year, this past year, for some change in the market based on the new administration, how it's going to impact the markets. I do agree that some exogenous event, some external event, is the thing that would take the markets down the most, something we're not thinking about. I do agree that, you know, there's definitely issues with energy. There's definitely issues with the power grids. There's some potential fallout there. There's fallout potentially with the internet. Another, you know, we did have that sort of global shutdown for a period during last year that I think most people have forgotten about already. But there are concerns like that. There's political concerns, geopolitical concerns. There are concerns with immigration here and backlash from that, how that's, you know, going to be implemented. And, you know, how much of it's going to get done and to what degree and what impact it's going to have on people and the economy and all that. So there are a lot of things out there to be paying attention to. And, you know, I'd say I'm coming into the new year with some enthusiasm and also maybe a little bit of, I don't know if I want to use the word entertainment, but I'd say a little more involvement, I think, in the market this year with some potentially good opportunities. If we do see some sell-offs.
I do too. I mean, I'm kind of anxious to get involved. We're starting to get a little more with the interest rates getting a little more normal, I'd say. The option pricing is getting more what I was used to a long time ago to, yes, where it makes it more, right, you might actually be able to have a covered call writing program that works for you for the first time in a while. You know, it's been really a struggle to do covered call writing and so forth. And, you know, maybe now we'll get back being able to do something like that for people, and you know, that those sorts of things. I don't somehow or another, Dan. I mean, I know, you know, I rag on this all the time. This somewhat turn up, and I don't know if Trump's a part of this because he's not afraid to contact people. The Federal Reserve is going right back to what's got us in this trouble in the first place. Right back to this expanding money supply, pushing asset prices up, and that's really what's taken one part of society ahead of another one. And I don't think they're going to get away, and basically lying to people on the consumer price index. I don't know that they're going to get away with that much further. I mean, of course, I've said that now for 5 years, so it's not like I've been, you know, I'm new on this. But I don't know that they can push this stuff much further without somebody of note coming out and saying, here's my CPI number, what are you guys doing, or something. I mean, you know, just like back in 82 when the one guy came out and said these rates could go down. I mean, somehow or another, I don't know that we can go back to that where we can have another big inflation year coming back in and we're going to see another 20% in the market and nobody else get a raise, literally. I'm not sure. But if you've been doing it this long, I think they think people are used to it and can pull it off. I mean, it basically is, thank you, sir, may I have another. I don't know that...
Like you said, it's sort of it's the separation. I says the people were coming into the year as well with a lot of cash still on the sidelines, and the bond market is still, you know, short-term T-bills I've been pushing. I pushed all last year. Our accounts, you know, I did performance for the year. Our average accounts were in the 6.5% to 7% range, and that was 100% fixed income accounts, where the bond market was only up 1.2%. Because we were able to make money staying on the short end, and then also in corporates, and also with some trading, and that's net of fees. So we're, you know, I still have a very positive outlook for the bond market because we are going to see some cuts. We're still getting some decent yield on the short end. The people who have parked their cash are still getting decent yield. That the people who are waiting for even more opportunities or new opportunities to come this year. So that's what that extra money that you're talking about in the money supply is still there. It's still real. It's you know, it's some of it's sitting on the edges in terms of investors, but we haven't had a whole lot of tightening, if you will, in the economy. The areas that we're talking about improvement in inflation, then again, the individual who's on the other end of the spectrum is still concerned about day-to-day costs, which we're all concerned about, you know, items like food and medical expenses, same things we've been talking about over the past year, housing. And those things I don't see an easy fix to those in the first few months, and that's why it is going to be interesting to watch where Trump you know, the Trump administration puts its focus initially? Is it going to be, you know, is some of the discussion of what we think going to happen going to actually happen in terms of any further, you know, declines in inflation based on any types of cuts at all in the money supply or any type of pullback in the money supply?
I agree with you.
I don't see it.
I don't see him, the personality that I've witnessed, you know, I'm following that guy long before he became politics. The personality there's no way on earth that he wants the market or asset prices down, because that's what he does. He's still in business.
Yes.
And I don't know that that's the leader we need right now economically, and not seeing the danger there. He doesn't see that if the market's up 20%, he's going to take credit for it, right? I mean, it's just the way he is. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, the market being up. It's a good thing. If it's up because the profits are there and everybody's participating. It's not okay if the inflation rate is, if we turn into Weimar Republic, it's not okay.
Right, but that's what actually happened before. I mean, in my view, the you know, cutting corporate taxes from 35% down to 21%, that was pretty significant, and that put a lot of money into the system, and you know, really it was the first thing that flooded the market. And that, you know, that short-term gratification where everything was up in the financial markets after that, after tax cuts, because it basically benefited every company out there. That you pay something for that, and you pay for it with the higher deficit.
Well, but you can't,
higher,
just because that's, you know, one of the things we get, even guys like you that know this stuff, because all these other people talk to your ear all day long, and they basically obfuscate the system. Lowering corporate tax rates does not put any money into the system at all. You just lower a tax rate. Now, if you lower it, now the receipts are now less to government, and you make up for that by printing money to make up for it, yes, but that's the second step of the process. You don't necessarily have to do that. You can go out with some massive spending bill, and Powell could say, you're on your own, and which means you got to tax for it or you got to borrow for it. I mean, if he turns off the press, there's only three ways the government can spend money. They can print it, they can borrow it, or they can tax for it. Now, you're supposed to do B and C, not necessarily A, right? That's A is cheating.
Right.
A is cheating.
Right.
And when they cheat, you get screwed because the dollar in your pocket is now worth less than it was before. I mean,
agreed.
But you know what? And nobody thinks that way. And I don't know. It's one of those things where, I hate to be dogmatic about it, but I mean, nobody, they managed to re-educate an entire generation of people from what happened during the 70s and 80s. We know what caused it. We know what the fix was. And by the way, we're doing it all over again. And yet, they're telling you they're not doing it. Yeah, they are. Anyway, but
You know, not necessarily directly related, but I was just seeing a post from a good friend this morning who was talking about, he's referring to like the way he raised his kids and how kids are being raised today, and how, you know, learning the basic things, and I learned all this as a kid, you know, like changing your oil and how to change a tire in the car. You know, the nuns taught us how to write checks and balance a checkbook and all, you know, so I was fortunate to have. It wasn't the nuns who taught us how to change tires. That was my dad.
Yeah.
but we did learn some. You know, I did learn some of those real life. You know, the things that are necessary to learn when you're getting out in the real world. And one of them that I've been pushing for a long time is just a little more, you know, emphasis in the school system on education, both at home and in school and elsewhere, on personal finance, because there's a lot of misconceptions, and there's a lot of misconceptions even today with some of the most intelligent people on the relationships between different factors, like, oh, you know, the bond prices, interest rates are coming down, so that means that's bad for bonds. I've heard that all of last year, you know, from incredibly intelligent clients to incredibly intelligent friends, just not really understanding that there's some basic relationships that really need to be taught, and they need to be taught at a young age so they can sink in and people can watch them, and then they can say, ah, this makes sense to me, or you know, we've always talked about this spectrum of fear and greed, and how we all fall. You know, you clearly don't want to be on one extreme of that, and it seems as if people have been chasing the market in 2024. The fear factor is much lower than it probably has been in quite some time, because people have been able to make money for the last 15 or 16 years without really a whole lot of effort. So there are some big picture things that, you know, look coming into 2025, I think, that we need to pay attention to. A lot of the money that's already been thrown at AI and now crypto, a lot of the speculation, you know, I heard a statistic that 95% of the return, the NASDAQ was up 28%, 95% of that return was from the top seven names. And that's, you know, pretty much across the board. And that, you know, there's no diversification there, obviously. Where I think some of the focus should be more on diversification coming into the next year. Infrastructure, there's still a huge amount of opportunity in infrastructure. We've only tapped the surface there. And, the whole, we talked earlier about energy, where there's a lot of opportunity, certainly healthcare. So there are some areas that have been somewhat overlooked or haven't been in focus. And I think if investors start going back to the basics, which are, you know, again, going back to my comment about learning the basics when you're younger, and one of those basic things to learn is diversification and not putting all your money into one particular area of the market or one particular, you know, not putting it all in real estate in the Northeast, you know, prior to the crash, or, you know, staying diversified. And it's a very simple concept, but it is not necessarily something that's taught in our society.
Let me ask you this. I'm glad you said that and not me, because I agree with every word you said, which is not supposed to do. But if all of a sudden we throw poor Dan on national TV and he's surrounded by either good-looking guys or good-looking girls, ladies, and they say, Dan, what the hell's the matter with you? There's seven stocks that are going up. The rest of the stuff isn't going anywhere. Why don't I want to just be in the seven stacks? Why do I want to be in the other crap?
Because, you know, that basic, you know, history doesn't, you can't.
Dan, you've been telling me that for 5 years. By the way, the XLE. I'm just glad I'm doing this to you and not you doing it to me.
Yeah, I think very diplomatically, I would let them know that there's more risk after something's gone up and, you know, broken new highs at, you know, 50 days in a row or 50, you know, days over the, you know, calendar year. I would diplomatically, you know, talk about the benefits of diversification and what has been overlooked. And I agree with you. I think the mantra, if you will, for the year has been so much energy focused on it and so much time spent on going over the same things. But what's really interesting, Chief, about all that is that despite all the attention and focus it's gotten in the media from all those good-looking guys and girls on the show, there hasn't been a lot of discussion of really what's going on behind the scenes. In other words, there hasn't been a real, you know, breakdown on the analysis of NVIDIA, you know, the company itself, the divisions, the where specifically they're hurting and where they're doing well. I mean,
Dan,
analysts certainly do that, Kramer, but you don't hear as much of that on
Kramer
the broadcasts.
Kramer named his dog NVIDIA. Apple's a church. What I'm saying, you know, I'm loving doing this to you because you could just easily be doing it to me. I'm with you. The diversification part. You know, maybe, boy, and I sure hope this isn't the truth. Maybe these people, the market could be right. Maybe Home Depot is such a monopoly now, not a monopoly in terms of definition, you know, where you can't get into the business. Maybe these companies have gotten so big, they're so far away from any kind of spanking from the Justice Department or any kind of monopoly trick they pull. Maybe they've got to the point now where they're going to roll over everybody. And to the point where you can't stop them, and they're inflation proof.
But you can stop them, and this is something that we talked about as a consumer. you can stop them. And I think it started to trickle down somewhat in some of the retail names, like the big box names that you're talking about, or even the larger banks. And what I mean by the consumer level, us as people, you know, so for example, the service, I've noticed a big difference in one of the noticeable behavioral changes I've noticed as a retail customer, is the level of customer service at the retail level seems to have improved. Now, having been with one of the larger banks for a long time, one of these banks that just has exploded, I've noticed that, you know, you get paid next to nothing in your checking account. You get paid even less in a, you know, your savings account, if you will. Certainly being a bond manager, knowing that they could be paying a lot more, people have shifted their money away, and that's how a lot of my clients have shifted money into what we call cash accounts, away from the bigger banks. And then all of a sudden they're realizing, okay, you know, all we need to do is take a picture of that check, or we can handle everything online. So why do we need to be with, you know, the largest bank? We can get some of these, maybe we can shop around. So I think it is creating opportunity for middle-sized companies or companies that can offer better customer service or better rates. Same thing with, you were talking about Home Depot, the level of customer service and you know, kind of getting in and realizing that the people who work there don't get a whole lot of training. So you're coming in as a person who's just trying to do a particular project on your house, and you have some questions, and nobody can answer those questions. So now you're going down to your local hardware store instead, where the people who've been there. I mean, that's what I want to believe, but I do think some of that's happening.
They had until they opened up a couple of stores close by. The Home Depot on North Avenue by me was the number one in the system. It was 24 hours, for God's sake. They had hookers in the parking lot. Told,
yes, sir.
I mean, literally, they did. And I don't know what would cause any of the people of the neighborhood I live around, which is generally, you know, fairly high income. I mean, I'm in a house that I rent or a building, but most of them, I mean, if there's people there that are throwing up, you know, $3 and $4 million shacks and, you know, knocking down two houses. I mean, their view of Chicago is different than mine, but the thought of them even knowing someplace else to go than the Home Depot, I can't. I mean, there's no way on earth the Home Depot could quadruple the price of a box of nails. They'd never know. They'd never care. I mean,
that is the thing. And there are those people that have, that do get sucked in, that don't shop around, that don't, you know, that stay in their hood, if you will, in the particular, you know, whatever opportunities are. But I do. I have seen people asking questions more, and maybe partly being in, you know, this industry and especially being focused more on fixed income, where people are asking about where they can get yield, and you can get yield, and it's been a long time since you've been able to get yield. So that would affect, you know, banks. But I've also seen it on the retail side as well, with stores shutting and new stores opening, different, you know, looking at even, you know, grocery store chains and you know, the dynamics of the, you know, the competition there and how you know, people do get, yes, you do become a loyal customer to those places, but then when you find out from your friend, or somebody will eventually tell you, and you will, or your bank account will run dry.
But Dan, did you ever, what is the, speaking of banks, let's talk about that for a second, but I also want to quiz you a little more about the idea of the money on the sidelines, because there's always money on the sidelines, or there's, you know, whatever, but I am stunned. I mean, when you look at what concentration can do for the businesses, there's some level. Now, here in this area, Illinois was the last state in the union to allow branch banking, right? So we probably have more small banks here than any other state in the union. Well, Kevin says there's quite a few in northern Indiana and southern Michigan, so it's sort of that effect. But we've gone from a Fed funds rate of 0.5% to 5.5%. I don't think banks have raised the interest they pay people at all. And if they did, they raised it, you know, 0.5% or percent. So you could be the world's dumbest bank. And if you've got people sending you their money,
all right, yeah,
for nothing, and you turn around and give it to the Fed at 5.5%, I'll take that all day long. Not to mention every other fee you charge people. I mean, but here you can go to Lakeside, and you can get 3.5% on your savings, or 4 or something, for a CD, maybe even more than that. You can go to some of the other smaller ones. There's probably 3 of them in the Board of Trade building, for God's sake. How do they meet with these other people? What's it like if I'm in California or Utah or Nevada? Do they have small banks, or is it just the big guys fleecing everybody?
I think it's probably more than the way you've described Illinois. There's probably more of the big banks, but there, you know, even in, people have asked the same question about Florida, because there's quite a few smaller banks that have managed to do well. And for, you know, depending on the demographic, if it's the younger generation who's, you know, doesn't have time to do their, wants to do all their banking on their phone. You know, if it's a smaller organization that's really, you know, mastered a good online, you know, system, then they'll do well. And, you know, if they were able to get into, to start doing marketing, I guess for me, some of it is just, it's just a belief or a hope. You know, it's that's the American way again, that here is like the opportunity that some of the bigger banks, bigger institutions are going to be naturally, you know, there's going to be a natural attrition with new smaller companies coming in, which is again what we really hope for in our country. And there is the opportunity right now. There's an opportunity now. I don't know if that opportunity, you were talking about with cash on the sidelines, there's absolutely the opportunity. Whether that's going to happen and to what degree it's going to happen, I don't know. And some of that will depend on the new administration and what's going to be allowed. But yeah, when the barriers to entry are huge, the ones on top are going to take advantage. When it's an industry like we're talking like banking, I mean, there's a lot of regulation, but there's still an opportunity for a local or smaller business to come in and undercut or pay more on you know, a savings account. Why not? That's what.
Well, when you say cash on the sidelines, I think we both agree that the Fed's beginning to pour money in here. We're going to break here in a second, but I just was talking to and to be perfectly blunt, Dan, I don't think I wanted him as an account. This older gentleman, he's a prosecutor or judge, whatever he is. But anyway, I just got the feeling I didn't want, wasn't somebody, when we've been in business as long as you and I have, you can be selective too, right? No, you don't have to take everybody.
Right, and, yeah, absolutely.
He finally comes back and he says to me, Happy New Year. And he's been telling me for like 6 months he wants to do something, right? Well, the dude's in his 80s. Every single penny is in one of the Fidelity market funds. There isn't a nickel that's in any kind of cash whatsoever. Not, you know, I'm even sure I want to have discussions with. He's so set on, this is how I've made all this dough. I'm never changing. I don't, you know, it's like, okay, go stay at Fidelity. Do your, you know, knock yourself out. I'm not so sure even the danger there is just too much.
Yeah, and I totally agree. It's going back to that, you know, that learning that basic, those basic concepts. I don't think they teach a financial course in law school, but I'm talking about going back to a much younger age where you understand things and have a bigger picture. And also we're talking a little bit about history and you know, the mentality that a lot of people have is, you know, I've done it on my own, it's been fine, it's been sitting there. And then what I usually will say back to them is, do you know how much you're paying for that? And do you know that, you know, they're taking 2 or 3%? I did notice recently that Interactive Brokers, for example, who we work with, and we keep our fees really low, has capped the fee that an advisor can charge to 2%. And I think that's a good idea.
Good for them.
Yeah, but they are one of the few. And I tell other people, we chose them. You know, they still pay over 4% on idle cash. They have the lowest margin rates. They're no frills, low cost, not necessarily hand-holding, but we've been pleased with the level of customer service improvement over the past few years. So, you know, those are that's an example of where I think it makes sense. And also, for the customers who can look at the, or the potential clients who can look at the long term and really what their goals are, those people are going to probably be blindsided at some point where something happens. I know, having been raised in the Boston area with Fidelity and, you know, been a money manager in Boston for many years, Fidelity had a reputation at the time for being certainly an excellent shop, but with a lot of resources, but also kind of a sweatshop and a place that put a lot of their managers through, you know, it was a very, very cutthroat environment for their managers, and they kind of pitted them against each other. They had it was not as collegial as some of the other Boston firms, let's put it that way. But what would happen that was a problem is you'd get a really good manager running, say, the Magellan Fund, that'd be in there for a few years, have extremely good performance, and then as soon as the performance turned, they would get terminated, and you have somebody else in there with the new strategy. So the thing that we've always done our homework on companies and organizations, whether they're mutual fund companies or stocks, bonds, and you really have to get into the weeds and into the background, understanding the companies, understanding what you're investing in. And I've used the example of somebody that I've told you about, who I've known, who's certainly well into retirement age, who, you know, 90% of his retirement money is in one Chinese stock, and I couldn't do anything to convince him to diversify.
Oh, yeah,
as a friend, just as a pal, you know, just to say, hey, this is, and here, you know, even to, you know, produce research reports and all that. So that sometimes it's hard to, you know, with that mentality, you're almost better off saying, hey, okay, do it on your own. But you know, make my other suggestion that I generally make to people is to take a little off the top. You don't have to switch out of everything. You know, you don't have to switch it all, but you know, take some of it off the top and put it somewhere else, and then you can make a decision for yourself. You know,
out of the last 10 accounts that we've received, I'm going to say 6 or 7 of them have been serious concentration issues, where, you know, they want me to protect them and so forth. And, you know, it takes a lot of education, a lot of sit down with that client, what you're going to do and what you're not going to do, and what they can expect, and especially if the thing is, you know, not as well traded as maybe you'd like. But that's something we'll do for somebody that I don't think anybody else will. They'll say they will, but they probably won't.
Yeah, a lot of the bigger firms won't do that, you know, unless they have even if the clients have a huge amount of money, they may put them into a program, but it's not with the level of service that they need.
No,
a level of attention, right? Because they can't possibly follow that, you know, the thousands of clients that they have. They can't possibly follow each unique situation like that, so they end up putting them all into one.
Well, but these people don't want to sell because they have tax issues, they got all kinds of issues, and it's
right.
It's very difficult to do. I already said we make a quick break here. We're kind of running over. We got to talk a little bit about the sports. When we come back, let's talk more about it, because I think some people, it reminds me on one level, God, of 1981, when nobody was in the stock market and everybody's making 12% at the bank, and the thought of diversifying for them was almost as crazy as diversifying now to most people, right?
Right.
I mean, talk about the mirror image, huh? S&P futures up 47, NASDAQ futures up 214. So far, a really good start to the year. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom with Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 49. NASDAQ futures up 223. Green around everything for everybody here today. We got everything's up all over the place. It's the and we've got Bears only have one more game to lose. All kinds of good stuff happening. Dow futures up 283. Individual stocks. Goldman Sachs up 6. American Express up 270. Amazon up 334. All the 7 stocks except for Apple. Apple's actually down 7 cents. All the rest of them are higher. Amazon up 2. Tesla's up 5. Of course, Tesla was down on Tuesday. Meta's up 740. Let's see if the rest of the world is celebrating with us. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 36.1%. The FTSE up 55.7%. CAC's actually down 26.4%. So they are not as bullish here. But they weren't as bearish on New Year's Eve either. So everybody's been kind of mixed. Nikkei down 386. That's a full 1%. 39,894. They were over 40,000. Hang Seng down 436, 19,600. It's down a whole 2%. Shanghai down 89, 2.7%. Ouch, ouch on those guys. They were not open on Tuesday, so everybody's catching up on there, too. So we'll get this all kind of straightened out by tomorrow. Bonds down 4 basis points, 4.53. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.33. Japan down 1, 1.07. Oil. 89 cents, 72.61. That's kind of a recent high. We'll get Greg's comment on that after we're done with this. We were under 70 for a while, and now we're shooting up here. Brent up 92 cents, 75.57. Natural gas up 2 cents, 3.65 is an elevated level because it looks like it's getting cold countrywide. RBOB up 3 cents, 2.04. Gold, a little bit of a bounce up here. Up 10.50, 26.51. Silver up 42 cents. That's a big move. 29.66. Copper unchanged, 401. We have foreign exchange. We get a load of this. The euro is down to 103.2. What a dollar has just been so strong. British pound at 124. We're talking probably a 3.5-4% move in the euro in the last 8-10 weeks. That's massive. That is massive. We've got crypto bouncing back up 2,000, 96,582. And we have just as a little bit of a review. On Tuesday, Dow was down 29, but S&P is down 25, NASDAQ down 175. So we're up double that in the S&P today, and maybe 1.5 on the NASDAQ so far. Greg, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, everyone. 7:42 here in Chicago. It is 26 degrees, mostly cloudy, possible snow later. High of 34 today. Phoenix, 46 degrees right now, mostly sunny. Record-setting temperatures, probably high of 75 later. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 11 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 24 minutes. Eisenhower in from Wolf, 14 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 13 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 15 minutes. Sports, Bulls lose at Wizards. That was 107 to 125.
Got our terrible.
Winter Classic could have gone better for the Hawks. They lost 2-6 to the Blues at Wrigley. And then NCAA college football playoffs, the Peach Bowl. Texas wins at ASU. That was two overtime spectacular, 39-31. Rose Bowl, OSU never trailed against Oregon, and that was 41-21. Sugar Bowl tonight, that was delayed after the terrorist attack. Notre Dame, Georgia, Irish favored by 1 today at 3 p.m. Central. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Should we ask Dan the key question regarding football and Southern people versus regular people? Dan, I wouldn't exactly call us Southerner, but now that you're down there, Dan, you're...
No. I'm definitely a Boston guy. I'll always be.
I'm going to ask a football question. And Greg, you know, Greg can be very cynical about these things. In the South, meaning anything below I-80, if the head stays on, is it targeting?
Very controversial call there.
Yeah, it's definitely a controversial call.
It wasn't the crown. It was the face mask, and they were...
The face mask.
I immediately got up.
No, I didn't see it, but I didn't see it. I didn't even see, like, a...
If you were to ask me during that...
I can kind of make a more broad, a more general question about, I think, trying to make calls like that in football. I think it's really tough. You know, the that's part of my... You know, I love sports, but that's part of my frustration sometimes with football. Is just making, you know, the consistency of the calls that are made, and there seems like there's a lot of downtime, if you will. And I guess you can say that about any sport, but I tend to be more of a hockey and baseball person as a result.
Do you recall the Georgia-Texas game of
the playoff game a few weeks ago? Yeah.
Well, the one quarterback got hurt, who just had surgery, by the way, and with the elbow. They brought in this second-string guy who obviously must be starting for Georgia today against Notre Dame. And the kid's, you know, he's a 4- or 5-star recruit. He's pretty good. He's down at about the 6-yard line or 5-yard line. Starts to run. Somebody targets him like one of the worst times I've ever seen. Whacks him right in the head. His helmet flies off, rolls about 10 yards. So all the Southern boy, good old boy referees get together and they decide it's not targeting. I'm going, for God's sake.
Yeah, I can see that.
And so
yeah, I can definitely see that.
But get a load of this. Because the helmet came off, he has to leave the field for a play. So they bring in the quarterback who's got one arm, and he hands the ball off to the guy, and the guy scores in Texas beats Georgia, right?
Yeah, that's not right.
I mean, so, but they made him leave the field because the guy knocked his helmet off. The idea of that rule is they didn't want guys pulling their helmets off so you can see their face for the NIL stuff.
It's weird. There were two, two schools of thought on the targeting rule, and one being the crown, and then the other, the defenseless receiver. And I don't know if he. It's not like if you were to ask me in live during that, I would have said 90-10 that was targeting. But then they came back and they reviewed it and they said, I guess he didn't launch and he didn't use the crown. He was defenseless though. I mean, I don't know. I would have called it.
I mean, instead of targeting, it should just be a cheap shot rule. And everybody knows what a cheap shot.
Cheap shot, yeah.
Anyway, these guys are nuts. But anyway, that's what the drill is. But real quick, since we have Greg here, Dan, which you do on Thursday, is there going to be any breakout futures market anywhere, Dan? Are we going to have a soybean, a grain market? Nobody even talks about that stuff anymore. Nothing moves. Dan, are we going to be wanting to asking Greg every week where are we going with oil and soybeans and those kinds of things, or is it be dead forever?
I don't think it's going to be dead forever. I think today is an interesting day, and I don't think we should take. I mean, I like the enthusiasm that the market's starting the year with, but really a lot of people are off until Monday. So starting Monday, I think we're going to have I would pay a little more attention to what happens on Monday in terms of the people looking at the futures. I do. I mean, I think any good money manager, whether you're a bond manager or it doesn't matter what your specialty is, you should be looking at the futures markets. You should understand the other markets, even if they're not your specialty. You should know the flow of funds and where money is going and where the money, all that I think is extremely important. That being said, I think you have to be careful not to look too closely day to day unless that's your area of specialty. You know, you're starting to watch blips in the market, once you put money in, and that, you get yourself in trouble from doing that. So I would say, pay attention, but unless you're involved in the market itself, don't try to, be very careful about timing it or looking at particular trends that you're seeing in the short
term. This time of the year, I mean, for what we do, and I'm obviously doing sort of the same thing, and Greg surely does, he's trading this stuff, you sort of have to, didn't you have to do this in 1997, Dan, when you only had the spiders and you only had the Qs, right? Now you have to be very concerned about your clients, even if they're in an index program, protected index program. There's all kinds of indexes, right? I mean,
right.
And a lot of the commodities movement sways some of the indexes. Obviously, the gold miners moves with the gold. I mean, to a certain, not as much as it should, but we had a big chunk of PTI investors' clients. I mean, they want it in there. I mean, it's all the discussion we have with individual people, and we just point out what the stuff has done and whatever, and we. But a lot of people really liked the XLV last year, which is the hospitals, the medical part of the S&P 500.
Right.
And we had a terrific year going, and thank God we had puts. I'm going to say as soon as it looked like RFK was going to be in that area, I think it gave up its entire year and closed unchanged, maybe down a buck or something on the, after being up, you know, 15-18%. So we, you know, since we had the protection on the way down, we made most of the money on the way up and kept most of it on the way down. So, but still, if somebody talks about the XLE, which we 4 years ago, a lot of people were in, it had a crummy year, everybody wanted out, and next year it, you know, went up like 40% or something. Well, the price of oil, I mean, whatever Greg thinks might happen to the price of oil is going to shake a lot of clients, which is going to influence people where they want to be in part of the oil piece of, or the banks. I mean, the banks this year have done pretty well. Most years it's been a dud, the XLF. What do you think about oil versus XLE this year, Greg? We all of a sudden we had a perk up the last couple of days. Is that it? Do you want to be an XLE instead of the Magnificent Seven? I mean, that would be one hell of a sell to make to somebody. But is it oil's year? Is it never going to be oil's year?
Looking at that kind of stuff, you need to realize what drives what. So in XLE and companies, yeah, it's important if you're pulling the oil out of the ground. But what the real thing is, what drives the price of the stock is probably the profitability rather than the price of the commodity itself. And it's weird to think about that, but if your costs have gone up such that it wipes out whatever profit or whatever gain in the underlying, it doesn't really make much of a difference, because in the ag world, call it, the refiners and the processors of the food, if their profit margins go up, the price of, call it, the companies themselves will go up, and maybe the commodity price might be flat, but it all has more to do with their operations and their utility, their efficiency, productivity, rather than the price of the commodity.
Well, but if oil goes up $20, the drillers are going to make a lot of dough.
It's great if you have that quick access to, call it, frack, or be able to satisfy that demand. Otherwise, you probably were hedged 6 months ago, and you're not benefiting as much.
That's true.
So it really, in trading the companies, you really need to be focused on how profitable are they right now. While trading the commodity, you know, you need to focus more on the supply and demand in, call it, 3 months or 6 months. Then it's a little different, but in general there are trends.
Well, if the price is going up, you should have a little bit of increased drilling, which means your Schlumbergers of the world should do a little better. They don't necessarily, if it's all fracking, because they're not as big into it. But that stuff, I mean, Dan, what if you had a pick? We talked a little about this last week, but brought in, you know, one of our clients, and, you know, we've got no, you know, we got $2 million just sitting there, cash. Well, of course, we might say, let's leave a third of it in cash. I would guess both of us might say that, or in a T-bill or something. We can always get rid of it if we want to. We could get rid of a T-bill in a day. If you had to pick these indices, which one would you pick this year? I mean, I think that the XLV might actually bounce with the healthcare piece. I don't think it's gone down too much because of the RFK thing, but that's one man's opinion. But I don't know. Oil, maybe?
Yeah, I would say a little bit of each in terms of, you know, the focus on energy and the focus on healthcare, and maybe even add to that a little bit a focus, you know, on industrials and materials in general. I mean, materials didn't perform well last year. Another thing that I'd add to sort of follow up on what Greg was saying, and I am in agreement, is that you have, you know, when you're buying an index, the good news is that it trades, you know, you can get in and out of it relatively quickly, but you're buying the winners and the losers. So right. Whether you're buying the, you know, the S&P 500, or whether you're buying the XLE or the XLV or any other index, you know, ETF, you're buying the winners and the losers. And I think we've had several years where you could do very well by just being in the index. going forward, I think the companies that can differentiate themselves based on cost, based on profitability, based on you know, what we look at, which is the manager's vision of the future, you know, based on who's running the show, based on where their focus is, and really getting to know the companies is going to start to matter more in 2025 than it was in, definitely than it was in 23 or 24. So for the last 2 years, you could be a hero being in an index. Going forward, to answer your question, I'd say diversify. If you can stay in the indices, you know, stay in the indices, but stay, you know, make sure that you have exposure to both, in that case, energy and healthcare. But also start looking at specific names, you know, get down a little bit more into small, you know, like which names will benefit most from, for example, changes in the, with the new administration. So that there, I think there will be more winners and losers in the individual names as we look as 2025, you know, as we get through the year, as we start getting into 2025, I think we're going to see some winners and some losers.
Well, the I mean, it's, you actually can. I mean, if somebody, you know, Dan, if we're sitting in a room and we'll have Greg in there with us, if somebody says, gee, here's like $20 million, you know, cash, and I want to be in all these, you can, if you want, really use the indexes to shave, you know. And again, I'm surely not, that's not what I do necessarily, is pick one versus the other, although you end up doing that with clients. But it seemed like, you know, 10, 12 years ago, we had a lot of people who, let's say there's 10 little indexes that add up to the S&P 500. It's, I think, how many of them are now, Greg? Because they broke out the, they broke out the something from the, in the XLF, which is the one they broke. They broke out property from the banks in the XLF, so there's actually like 11 or 12. Anyway, we'll get the number tomorrow. But if you want, yeah, I mean, if you wanted to, you could say, I really want to be in the S&P 500, but I want to overweight oil or something. You know, we could put, you know, $1 million in the S&P 500 and another 100,000 in the XLE, so you're essentially 0.2 or 0.2 oil. I mean, it's easy enough to do. I mean, if you just said, well, gee, I can't stand, I mean, we've never done this for anybody, but you could. I can't stand the materials. For some reason, you know, I got a hair up my behind it. Materials are going zero. You could actually short the materials, right? That one, was that the XLM or something? You could if you wanted to. I don't, we've never done that yet. Or you could say, I think RFK is going to bury this XLV, you know, the healthcare thing. Those guys are never going to be another vaccine. There's going to be this. Those guys are going to be half with. You could short the XLV, right? You could be buy extra XLEs and short the other one, or buy extra puts in there or something. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can do if you had the window to the world on the next year. But who the hell does, Dan? Do you?
Right. No. And that's why we're, you know, as you know, kind of the theme, I guess, of the discussion, diversification for this year is going to matter. At least at this point, at this year, we don't have the. We're all excited to see what's going to happen with some of the changes with the new administration, but we really don't know. And I think that uncertainty is going to continue to waver. And I don't know that I'd be putting all of my cards and, you know, all my bets on one number at this point, or one sector. So I'd say to start the year, yes, stay diversified. As the year goes on, look for those names that are going to weather, you know, those stocks, those bonds, because we look at bonds in particular. Some that have done extremely well, that did extremely well in 2024, and certainly way ahead of their peers. Those banks that had those bonds that had the free cash flow to pay, you know, to start calling them in early, or to make payments that, you know, we wouldn't have expected to be receiving earlier in the year. So in other words, they were better capitalized in the environment, even though maybe they were boring names or they didn't have a lot of excitement. Like the top, you know, like the big seven. But yes, I would say stay diversified, but stay focused on which names are, you know, within those sectors are doing well. Not the time to put all your eggs in one basket. Absolutely not.
What do you guys think of my bigger fear here for the market has to do really with, if the Fed continues to do what they're doing, I don't think they're going to be as successful this time as talking people into thinking there's not going to be any inflation. And if they continue to run the money supply up in the 5 and 6 number, I see by the end of the year 10-year rates at like 7%, maybe 6.5%. And if that's the case, I believe the market will be hard-pressed to stay here. Do you think I'm totally out of my mind or not?
No. No, I don't think so. And you know, even just looking at the, you know, what I was talking about earlier with bonds, I mean, for the year last year, they're actually only up 1.2%. And a big part of that is because the long end, meaning longer term bonds, when the yield goes up, the price goes down. And there's risk now because mortgage rates are about 1% higher than they were in September. So we already have a risk, some risk from the slightly higher rates that we have, and then rates will continue to track higher. Meaning, for the investor, stay away from long bonds at this point. But meaning for the consumer and for the economy, probably more softening. It's going to have a softening impact. It's going to have a negative impact going forward, and it is likely to happen. We're moving in that direction, and I think you made a good call, Chief, earlier last year in thinking that we're going to see, you know, higher, longer rates.
If long term. Real quick, we got a dash, but if we get a month shock where we get a CPI number of like 1% or something, and then all of a sudden the next morning, this has happened before. It happened in Europe a couple of years ago, where all of a sudden the 10-year rate, instead of being, right now I've got it at 4.8, if the next day it's 5.5 or something, what does that do to your stuff? What does it do to my stuff?
We're immune from that because we're in the short end, you know. Yep. So we stay away from that, and in the corporates, you know, buying corporates and munis, we're also staying short, so it really doesn't impact us. In fact, if anything, it makes us look good, like last year. But it definitely impacts the bigger market. I think it the broader market, the stock market as a whole. I think it takes some risk off the table that people have had on the table for the last few years. So it would definitely have an impact. That being said, there's still a lot of money out there. A lot of people, have kept money in the high interest bearing, you know, the shorter term accounts. People are still waiting for a big play to come. So there's, you know, a lot of people made a lot of money the last 2 years. So, and money makes money, and that's how the markets keep going. So a move like that you're talking about, a one day move, could have a short term impact, and then it could be a buying opportunity.
Well, Dan, we got to do it, buddy. Happy New Year, and hope to see you soon.
Same
of course, I know it's getting cold up here, so I'll never see you. But
not for a while.
But Happy New Year to you, Greg. Nice job as usual. SP Futures now only up 33, was up 40-some. We're still up, but not near as much. NASDAQ up 147 instead of 247. But we're still bullish. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.